Jones steps up right down the middle of the field. It's touchdown. Devontae Smith cannot be stopped. A truly special performance by the Heisman Trophy winner. Three touchdowns in the first half. In a season of chaos, the Crimson Tide are the conference. Constant excellence. Bama bludgeons the Buckeyes. And Saban steps past Paul Bryant with his seventh national championship.
You know, a lot of guys, you know, played not absolutely 100% because we were beat up, but showed a lot of guts and a lot of grit out there in terms of the way they competed and the way they performed. I think it was a fantastic offensive performance by Mack and Smitty and the whole group. The offensive line has done a great job all year long. So really just can't say enough and can't really put it into words in terms of how proud I am of this group, this team, because they are the ultimate team.
Alabama cruises to the championship last night. It looked like it was going to be a boat race right off the bat. You're going to have a ton of scoring. Neither team could stop each other early, but then eventually Alabama started to figure a few things out on defense, and Justin Fields did not play very well last night, and he needed to play great for them to have a chance, and he did not, and Ohio State was short 13 players because of COVID and injuries. Then Trey Sermon getting hurt on the very first carry of the game didn't help, and they had another big-time lineman that got hurt in the second quarter, so Ohio State was up and against it. You know, I have this weird little thing that I'm going to throw out there, and I know this may sound like a conspiracy theory, and I know there are a lot of people like, oh, God, let's not talk about conspiracy theories because, you know, Lord knows that people have enough of those in political realm. But why is it that I didn't hear Alabama dealing with a lot of COVID here down the line at the end? I'm just throwing it out there. Like, did they just not get tested? I mean, I know they had to get tested, but it's just like, how did Alabama not have anybody affected by COVID? Because I didn't hear about it.
Yeah.
I mean, Nick Saban had it early in the year, the coach. They had some, but they never missed a game. They didn't have to postpone or reschedule a game because of anything they did. Alabama just swam. I mean, they just, like, flew through this thing pretty smoothly except for their head coach.
Yeah.
It kind of makes you wonder a little bit, doesn't it? Because we know teams that did this in high school, and I know high school and college are different, that, you know, a few days after, some of these teams suddenly had, hey, we got COVID, or we got positive cases, or we got quarantines. Like, but how did we get through the football season? That just suddenly popped up? Or, I mean, you know, it is interesting when you think about it. I mean, the Big Ten has tougher protocols.
Oh, for sure.
Than the SEC. And Ohio State was kind of, they were shorthanded, not trying to make excuses. They got beat, and if they were at full strength, I still think they'd probably lose. But Alabama we didn't see anything about Alabama missing anybody last night due to COVID. Just throwing it out there. Did that ever cross your mind?
Not really, I guess. I just.
It's like when I read a story and there's 13 players out for one team, I'm like, well, there's got to be five or six for the other team, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't the case.
Yeah.
I just wonder.
Yeah. And I don't know if, like you say, if. I don't know. I don't know why or how or what the situations are at any place, to be completely honest, you know. And it's just, you know there's outbreaks in some places and some places don't have them. It happened a lot in the NFL, right, where, you know, the Tennessee would have an outbreak but Buffalo didn't. But it's a different time of year, obviously. I get that. But
you tell me Alabama's handled this so much better than everybody else in
the country?
I find that hard to believe. I mean, Alabama has dealt with it better than Kansas State University, University of Kansas. I mean, granted, they got a lot more money to try to do it. Maybe we're not privy to. I mean, there would have been a significant player that was out last night. We would have known.
Oh, sure.
Well, there was no. I mean, I didn't hear anything from the announcers about anybody for Alabama being out unless there's somebody who's hurt.
No.
I never heard anything COVID related, but you did with Ohio State. There was a report before the game, 13 players are out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is interesting to me. I mean, I don't know how it can be that lopsided is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You know? Because you see in basketball where teams go, every team has already seems like, for the most part, has gone through it. Now, in fairness, you could argue KU basketball.
Yeah.
Their women's team has dealt with this. K-State now, all three teams are dealing with it. The football team, then the women's team, and now the men's basketball team. We'll get to that in a moment. KU football had to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Every team in the Big 12 was affected by it. Oklahoma was, but Alabama isn't nearly as affected by it. It just makes me wonder. I'm just throwing it out there. It makes me wonder, what's Alabama doing so great that everybody else isn't doing so well when it comes to this? Or
what are they not doing?
Or what are they not doing? Now you're with me. Now maybe there's something they're not doing. And maybe they're doing everything legitimately. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, and I mean, I knew where you were coming from. I just, sure. I, you know, I it's hard for me to go there because I have no clue, right? And it's there's so many places that are like that probably. That, like you said, I know of at least two or three high schools, you know, that were like that.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Playoff football is done. Okay, let's go.
I know of some that didn't even get to the playoffs that did that.
Yeah.
Regular season just to get through the regular season. And did
yeah.
That. Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I just.
I have a hard time believing.
These places are going to do things different, but.
Yeah. I don't know.
Just hope they're you hope they're doing stuff right.
Well, and the conferences had different protocols. I mean,
for
that
sure,
has to be
yeah.
pointed out.
Yeah.
Big Ten was much more stringent than the SEC. I just waiting, and I'm sure it was out there, and I didn't search for it. Notre Dame saying, "Hey, see, everybody thought we shouldn't be there. We played them closer than Ohio State did." Yeah, Alabama like put on the brakes fourth quarter against Notre Dame, and oh, by the way, they had another game to play. Whereas here, they could just lay it all out on the line because there's no game coming up 10 days later. So I don't put any credence in that. But anyway, I'm sure some Notre Dame fans do. Yay, congrats. You only lost by 17. Give yourself a cookie and a slap on the back. But Alabama was the best team all year long. I mean, we need this.
Yeah.
I mean, they got their 18th national title in program history. They played all of the possible 13 games. That's kind of leading to. There's SEC teams that didn't play all their games. They did. They were unchallenged throughout much of the season. Really, Florida challenged them some. But yet they were in control of that game. And this team might be the best of all the championship teams that Nick Saban's had. This is his sixth national championship as coach at Alabama. He won one at LSU, so now he has seven, more than Bear Bryant now. They had a lot of stars that they lost last year. And then, it's amazing what Alabama did this year. I'm like, no, it isn't. They have five-star recruits everywhere. I mean, they got a five-star recruit at quarterback that didn't even play this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to slide in. Najee Harris was a five-star recruit. Devontae Smith, I mean, Jalen Waddle goes down, and the other guy wins the Heisman.
Yeah.
So I really feel sorry for Alabama when they have an injury. I'm really worried about it. Alabama lost their starting center. Did you see them skip a beat last night? Starting center ripped up his ACL in the Florida game, I believe.
Yeah.
He came in for the last couple of snaps in victory formation. Did you notice them go down a notch at all? No, because they had another All-American in there to play center. Alabama's offensive line averaged 335 pounds last night. They're all 6'3 and taller. I mean, and that's why I don't believe Steve Sarkisian is going to be awesome at Texas, because I think, and I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's easy, not at all. But I'm saying it's a lot easier to have the best offense in the country when you have one of the best, probably two quarterbacks in the country. You have the best running back, in my opinion, in the country. You have the best offensive line. I don't even think it's close in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the best wide receiver, the best player in football, according to the Heisman Trophy voters, in Devontae Smith. And you didn't even have Jalen Waddle for half the season, who's as a first-round NFL draft pick at wide receiver. Tell me again why I should think Sarkisian's going to do – he ain't going to have that talent at Texas. I mean, he's going to have talent, but he's not going to have all that talent.
No.
So, Bill O'Brien now is, the failed head coach of the Texans – is going to resurrect his career. He's going to go to Alabama. He's going to slide in that spot. Lane Kiffin was in it before Steve Sarkisian. Don't act like Steve Sarkisian reinvented the wheel when it comes to offense. All he did is he just expanded upon what Lane Kiffin had already done at Alabama. Because Nick Saban and Alabama was back in the Stone Ages, and everybody was talking about 4 or 5 years ago, the SEC plays defense, the Big 12 doesn't, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then all of a sudden, Alabama realized they have to evolve as well. And Lane Kiffin started that. They hired him. And then they got Sarkisian. He did a really good job, obviously. And then I think you can plug in a lot of really good coaches, and they're not going to skip a lot next year. I think Bill O'Brien, if he comes in offense coordinator, he'll be fine. He'll resurrect his career. He'll get a job a couple years down the road, and then he'll get another shot, because we see a lot of coaches, especially white coaches, retread coaches that get all kinds of opportunities. We know that. So Bill O'Brien will. Then who's the next guy to resurrect his career and go there? Because I think you can plug in any good or great offensive mind in Alabama, an offensive coordinator right now, with the talent they have and the way they can recruit. And they can recruit any which way they want to. They were just a little bit behind the eight ball as to not evolving to getting the wide open offense. They finally came around. Now they're the best at it. I mean, you could be the best at anything as long as you get the studs to do it. So, I mean, Alabama recruits, that's a big part of the game. I think it's easier to recruit at Alabama than anywhere in the country right now. And the reason I say that is it's because of the unlevel playing field we have in college athletics when it comes to football. First of all, the little guy has no chance to knock off Alabama because you won't allow them into the playoff, even though they probably wouldn't beat them anyway. Secondly, kids that want to win championships that are 4 or 5-star recruits, because you're a 3-star, Alabama doesn't even look at you. So a 4 or 5-star recruit that wants to win championships – and maybe have a chance to go to the NFL, they figure, you know, Alabama's a great place for me. And if they're willing to sit a year or two, you know, Devontae Smith didn't play a lot his first year or two, his first year especially, I'm going to go to Bama. And I'm not even going to listen to teams like Kansas State, Kansas, Iowa State. I'm going to listen to Alabama. Mm. I'm going to Alabama, maybe Clemson, maybe Oklahoma's in that level. Not at really Alabama's level, but Clemson and Ohio State and Alabama are really the three best programs right now. Some people could throw in Notre Dame and in Oklahoma, maybe behind there, maybe Georgia. Okay, fine. But there's basically six at the most, I'd say, half a dozen, depending on which ones you pick, half a dozen programs in America where five-star recruits are really wanting to go. They don't really want to consider all these other places. Where in basketball, you're seeing five-star recruits. One went to Howard, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. Like, they know there's only so much playing time, only so many players on the floor at one time, and they also know they can, you know, they can bolt for the NBA, you know, mm-hmm. very quickly after it'd be a one-and-done, whereas NFL, it isn't a one-and-done situation. And so I think there's just a very, very, very unbalanced playing field for anybody that wants to try to beat Alabama. And, oh, by the way, Alabama has the best recruiting class in 2021, which I would argue they could recruit a tree and a gas can, and people would say they have the best recruiting class because Alabama thought a gas can could be a human. I just feel that's the way it is. It's automatic. You know, they're going to be – Texas automatically top 10, top 20 recruiting class because that's just what we do every year. And so I'm sitting here and I'm looking at I'm looking at Alabama. They have the best recruiting class coming in. Maybe they supposedly, according to the pollsters or ranksters, whatever you want to call them, the recruiting experts, Alabama has the most talented class ever coming in 2021. So, yay. Alabama's won six of the last, what is it, six or seven of the last 13 titles, six of the last 12, I guess it is. And now they're going to have the best class coming in. Oh, no, we're going to lose Najee Harris. What are we going to do? Oh, no, we lost Mac Brett Jones. What are we going to do? Oh, Devontae Smith's going pro. What are we going to do? Oh, we lost a sophomore defensive lineman. What are we going to do? You just throw in another All-American five-star recruit. And then you coach him up. You know, I'm not saying they don't coach. Not saying that at all. They do coach. I think it is hard to coach super talented guys in regards to getting them to buy in sometimes, but they have a tradition, a culture at Alabama. So if you – here's the thing at Alabama. If you get a five-star recruit that doesn't buy in, you can kick them to the curb because you have plenty of other recruits to grab. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you get a five-star recruit to Kansas State, they don't buy in, you really do about whatever you can to please that person to keep them there, or they're going to transfer out. It's a whole different environment, and it's a whole different level of playing field. And Alabama knows how to play this game, and they're doing it legally, we think. And it's just going to be Alabama. It's going to be the same teams over and over until something changes, and it's not going to change anytime soon. So for me, college football, you told me this a few years ago, that when it was always the Patriots and the Steelers and the conference title game AFC, you said, this is boring. I don't need to watch this. You know, I got to the Cavaliers playing NBA Finals the last year. To me, it was kind of boring mm-hmm. because I knew the Warriors were clearly a better team that year, and it was like, oh, it's the same teams all the time. I want to see new blood or at least different teams in there. And that's how I feel about the college football playoff. Let's open it up and let other teams have a shot. You know what? There might not be much drama as to who's going to win it all, but at least there could be drama as to who's going to play Alabama for the title.
Yeah.
Could we at least do that? And instead, we're stuck with this system, and I know there's probably, you know, Cincinnati wouldn't have beat Alabama. And I get it, but Cincinnati might have beat, you know, if you had a 12-team playoff or a 16-team playoff, who's to say the 12 seed couldn't beat a 5 and a 4? That's a Cinderella story then.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's Cincinnati. Maybe it would have been Coastal Carolina. That would give you something to talk about. Instead, all we're talking about is the dominance and greatness of Alabama, how Notre Dame wasn't even to their level, and really, honestly, nobody was this year. Yay.
No.
That was exciting. I don't think it's good for college football to have blowouts in the championship game every year. That's three straight years it's been a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
So if Ohio State and Clemson can't compete with Alabama or win, which I know last year LSU won it, and I know a few years ago Clemson blew out Alabama. So Clemson can hang with Alabama. I think Ohio State can still recruit the talent to hang with Alabama. But after those two programs, tell me, Georgia, I think, can have the talent to hang with them, but I don't think they've got the coaching to put them over the top.
No.
I'll take Nick Saban over Kirby Smart any day of the week. So you tell me who's going to knock off Alabama other than those few I just mentioned. It ain't going to be Oklahoma.
No.
Anybody?
No. It takes like another SEC school, like LSU last year, right?
To have a once-in-a-lifetime team.
To break free mm-hmm. and have Auburn everything that they need in one season,
Cam
right?
Cam Newton one year.
Mm-hmm. And so...
But it's a smaller window, isn't it?
Yeah. You don't have... I mean, you can catch them, you know, maybe once every 4 or 5 years, right?
Yeah.
Those three teams that you're talking about, or four, whatever it might be. Um, But, yeah, I mean, you've seen it. I mean, Clemson and Alabama have really had a stranglehold on this except for LSU last year.
Right. And Ohio State breaking through, even though Clemson made a playoff this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Notre Dame's in there a few times.
But, again, Alabama was at the end of it, so right. It didn't matter what Ohio State did to Clemson.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, when you really look at it, you beat Clemson really bad, but what did that even get you in the end? Because you were throttled in the championship game. So it is. It's like, you know, it seems like it's Alabama or Clemson at the end, and all these other teams are just trying to break through. LSU did it. But
I get it when you're a fan of Alabama. This is awesome.
Oh, for sure.
Just like KU men's basketball. When you win the Big 12 every year, you think it's awesome. But honestly, it kind of becomes boring. If you're not a KU fan, it becomes boring. It's like, who's playing for second? You know, when the Yankees are dominant in baseball, the Celtics win all those titles in a row, you know, with Bill Russell and them, that had to be boring, especially with less teams to compete at the time. I mean, it's great for that team and that city, but it's really not that great outside of it. That's why the NCAA tournament to me is the best. Because the big dogs and the top guys a lot of times get upset. And yeah, at the end of the day, usually it's a top flight team that wins it, but we've had times where six seeds have won the tournament. That's the one great thing about, I mean, that's the biggest great thing about the NCAA tournament is we play it out and we have upsets. And, you know, I mean, you know, usually in NFL, usually the best team wins. I mean, there's teams that get hot. We've seen a six seed Packers won a Super Bowl. We saw the Giants. But for the most part, your ones and twos usually win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Usually. Not always, but usually. The NBA, I mean, you don't see a lot of low seeds win the NBA title.
No.
I mean, the Rockets did one year. That was only because they had injuries all year and they didn't even care what their seeding was. Right. That's the only way. I mean, and we knew all along with the Rockets, they were still one of those top teams. They just, you know, were just taking their time and getting healthy for the playoffs, and then they won the NBA title, and they were a six seed one year. But when you look at professional sports, you know, the Royals were kind of a Cinderella, you know, that year in 14, clearly. But when you look at professional sports, for the most part, the top teams during the season are going to win. Why? Because the playoffs are set up for the best teams to win. In college football, it's set up to only allow the three or four best programs, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas the NCAA tournament, there is no best of seven, best of five. And that's why I think that's the best postseason format that we have.
That's the most exciting.
Yes.
There's no question about it.
And why? Because more teams have a chance.
Yeah.
It isn't predictable. I mean, it might be predictable who's going to be the one seeds, but that doesn't mean the one seed's going to win. Just see Virginia 2 years ago. Lost to UMBC. I mean, for crying out loud, a 16-1. That'll never happen. It did. You know, Bucknell's not going to beat Kansas. Northern Iowa can't beat Kansas. You know, things like that. Happens all. Lehigh can't beat Duke. Contraire, mon frere.
Yeah.
And so the, you know, Patriot League teams get a chance at the big dogs. It's just, to me, that's refreshing, and that's what I love about the tournament is we can sit here and think we have it figured out, but usually we don't. I mean, all you got to do is look at people picking their brackets. Nobody gets a perfect bracket.
No.
Nobody. I mean, whenever we have a contest, people miss 20 or 25 because it is unpredictable. And that's what I like. If everything's so predictable, it just becomes mundane. And I feel like that's what college football has become. It's become mundane. It's like, who's going to be getting the three spots along with Alabama? I know Alabama didn't make the playoff last year. I get it, okay? But almost every, they've been in the playoff every other year, and they usually make the championship game and don't lose in the semifinals. And if it isn't Clemson, then it's Alabama winning it when they make it to the final. The only team to beat Alabama in the final under Nick Saban has been Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of, I don't know, it's mundane. That's all I'm saying. It's predictable. It's mundane. Honestly, that wasn't that fun a game to watch unless you're an Alabama fan last night. I mean, I appreciate the talent, the offense, making it look so easy, but I just don't know what. Is that good for college football is my question. I guess if the ratings are still good and the sponsorship is so good, then college football doesn't care. But I'm telling you, they can make so much more money and do so much more if they widen that playoff field. And I know it just makes for more teams to get their butt kicked by Alabama. Okay, but there'll be other really good games besides that matchup.
Mm-hmm. College football is fine no matter which way they go with that.
Right.
But they will make more money, I feel like, if they expand it.
More interest,
There's more interest.
It'd be like wild card in baseball.
More games on TV means more money.
Well, look at the NFL. They just went to six teams in each conference playing on the first weekend, and only one team got a bye. They added two games to the first weekend of the football playoffs. Triple header Saturday, Sunday. I don't even see the ratings yet, but I can just tell you, I guarantee you they were good.
Yeah.
So that's extra revenue. So why wouldn't you want extra playoff games?
Yeah.
All right. because apparently the big dogs are worried that the little guy might have a chance to beat him? Man, take all the money, and if you occasionally get beat, so be it. It happens in college basketball, and it doesn't kill the product.
Yeah.
Does it? In fact, it helps it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, that's just my two cents.
And in college, there's been problems in college football for a long, long time. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And just add it eventually, to it, right? You're going to see the Power Five break off for the NCAA completely anyway, probably. Yeah. Devontae Smith, the difference, according to Ryan Day. Yeah, you think? 12 catches, 215 yards, 3 touchdowns, and just one half of action, then he got hurt? Yeah, if he didn't get hurt, how many points did Alabama scored last night? 70, 80?
Yeah, we got that turnover early. That kind of got us going a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I've seen one better than that. I mean, he just seemed to create a lot of separation. He's obviously very fast. He plays stronger than he looks. You know, he's not a very big guy, but his play strength is significant. And he just eats up ground down the field once he gets those strides going. Tremendous ball skills, you know, Heisman Trophy winner, and well-deserved. He's a great player.
Yes, he is. Outstanding player. And Alabama, 13-0, 18th national championship program history, 6th under Nick Saban. Saban now has 7, 621 yards of offense against Ohio State in a national title game. This isn't 621 against Vanderbilt. 52 points, the most ever scored by Alabama in a national title game, the most in a bowl game since 53. And, you know, Mac Jones, last night, all he did was throw for 464 yards and 5 touchdowns and was 36 of 45. But other than that,
yeah,
Alabama didn't have much work.
He really
last
didn't
night.
Even come close to making a mistake, right?
No, he really didn't. He had the fumble.
As far as interceptions, just throwing the ball over the field.
My oldest son and I were watching the game, and we're sitting there going, how is Devontae Smith so wide open? It's like they don't know he's a Heisman Trophy winner. That play where he didn't even have to run a route. He got behind the linebacker. We saw it on the snap. We saw it watching it. Noah and I watched it. And at the snap, him and I both go touchdown. We saw him. Out of the corner of the TV screen, we knew Devontae Smith already had a touchdown. Because a linebacker, they were 10 yards off the line of scrimmage, their DBs. They didn't press him at the line, nothing. And they just gave him a free release. So he's coming full speed at you, and then a linebacker's trying to cover him? Good luck with that. He was open by 10 yards. And I'm like, this is supposedly the best team to challenge Alabama, and Devontae Smith's running rampant all over their defense. I was like, how can this be? I mean, sure, maybe the schemes allow them to get that set up that way because Alabama's offensive scheme play calling is so great. But I'm like, here's a thought. Don't you think that's the one guy you can't let beat you? I find it hard to believe. I mean, it wasn't like he made great catches left and right last night against great coverage. He was wide open.
Yeah.
So, it was very predictable. Very predictable. Okay, we've got high school basketball tonight, and for folks that are still listening, we're going to cover KU and K-State Nebraska basketball situation as well. Former K-Stater, Hall of Famer, I'll tell you who that is, and a former Royal cashing in, and you'll never guess who that former Royal is, and a former Chiefs coach is out as a head coach at another NFL organization. Could a current Chiefs coach replace that former Chiefs coach? I know it's hard to play along, but we'll do the best we can with musical chairs in the NFL. But we do have local basketball, local sports tonight. Dusty will get us started, and we got some sound from some of the coaches as well.
Yeah, I'll just go through the schedule here first. Coming up tonight on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com, we've got St. John's Tipton at Osborne for the Northern Plains League matchup. We'll have pregame coverage beginning at 5:50. The girls' game starts at 6. The boys will follow there on Katy Country 94. And then online video stream at ncksports.com, Ellsworth at Beloit tonight. It's boys only. JV game starts at 4:30, C-team around 5:30, and then the varsity around 6:30 here tonight there in Beloit and North Central Activities Association play. So this was going on our station and on online video. Also in the Northern Plains League, Lakeside at Thunder Ridge tonight, Lawrence Nelson at Rock Hills, Natoma and Sylvan Lucas playing in Natoma, Lincoln hosting Tescott, Pike Valley at Southern Cloud, Mid-Continent League Smith Center hosts Russell tonight. And in the NCKL, Concordia against Marysville, Southeast Slint at Clay Center, Valley Heights at Minneapolis, and a couple non-league games in the NCAA. And then Sacred Heart at Republic County tonight will be girls only. Sacred Heart's next four boys games have been canceled due to COVID quarantine and COVID issues there for Republic County. So Sacred Heart, Smith Center, Minneapolis, and Hillsboro, their next four for the Republic County boys, have been canceled due to COVID quarantine. So, again, that's the situation there. And if you want to see ever the local schedule, you can always check out ncksports.com. So that's what's going on high school hoops tonight.
All right, let's focus in on the games we'll have on the radio tonight and then on the video streaming. Let's start with the games that you'll have tonight in Osborne. St. John's Tipton, the Blue Jays against the Bulldogs. The girls game, well, Osborne's off to a great start, and we know that St. John's Tipton, Osborne usually have some pretty good battles. Leah Bergman, head coach of the Blue Jays, her thoughts on the Lady Bulldogs tonight.
They're very fast. They're very aggressive. They're scrappy. I think they're going to come guns blazing for us, as most teams are in our league. So I think we're going to have to come out ready to play. Sometimes we have a history of starting out a little slow, and it takes us a half a quarter to a quarter to get going. So I'm really going to challenge our girls to come out from, you know, tip-off or handoff, I guess, from the throw-in, ready to play and really get after it.
I mean, you said tip-off. You've been alive your whole life, basketball, and you say tip, handoff, throw-in. I don't know what you call it. The whatchamacallit to start the game, it is weird. It really is. I get it. I get it, Coach Bergman. I totally do. Coach Luters, I got to think about it a little bit. Trina, right?
Yes.
Oh, goodness. Thank you. I got it right. Trina, who has Trinity on her team. Trina Luters, head coach Osborne girls, off to a great start. They need to be ready to go and ready to play tonight.
That is going to be a good matchup. It seems to always be a good game when you face St. John Beloit. And we are, again, ironing out some of our little pieces that we know we need to focus on to make everything click, kind of fine-tune what we need to focus on to come into that game on Tuesday.
All right, Dusty, what do you think of this girls' matchup tonight?
I'm looking forward to it. I Osborne's done such a good job of really starting the season, and they started off with that win over Thunder Ridge right off the bat, and I think it gave them a lot of confidence to get the season going. And you've seen that now with a 6-0 record and really seem to be playing really good team ball together and things of that nature. Now, St. John's Tipton is starting to get some of their younger, more inexperienced players into the rotation and understanding what they need to do when maybe like the last time out, Lauren Dubert's not on, like she's not 100% and making everything and really carrying the team. Everybody can have an off game, and Paige Hollerick really stepped up last time against Southern Cloud. And so if they can do that, you know, these are the two teams, along with Thunder Ridge, as they continue to improve on the girls' side in the MPL, that we're going to be looking at that are going to be, you know, fighting for the league championship, which probably means more this year since you're not having the tournament. So trying to get those wins and get these kind of games, and I'm expecting a really good close battle tonight on the girls' side. As a handicap, I don't even know which side to lean on, to be completely honest with you. So really looking forward to a good one tonight in that girls' game.
All right, the boys' contest should be a good one as well. Lance Bergman, head coach of the St. John's Tipton Blue Jays, it'll be a different style of game tonight against the Bulldogs.
They're a little bit smaller team. They're going to probably try to spread us out, drive, kick it, and they like to shoot outside shots, and they're really good at that. I know the Beffer kid had a really good shooting night from three that one night, and then, you know, we know Grady Walters from the last 2 years has hit a lot of big three-pointers and tough shots against us. I've heard a lot about the freshman kid that came up, you know, knowing a little bit about him with having a freshman that we've been playing a little bit in Daniel. So it's going to be a completely different style basketball game than it usually is.
And on the other side, Osborne with some inexperience, Coach Jamie Walters wanting to focus on just improving as they go.
We're trying to, you know, put in kind of a new system just because we got different players with different abilities. So it's kind of been, you know, it was tough on them, but equally tough on coaches just trying to figure out, you know, what's going to work the best and that kind of stuff. We had several really good drivers last year. We don't probably drive the ball as well as what we have in the past. And so we're working in some different stuff.
All right. How do you see this boys game tonight, which we'll have on KDKench94 and KDKench94.com tonight?
Yeah, it is funny, like what Coach Bergman's saying. It's going to be a different style of game, but I still think it's going to be a classic type of, you know, close game and might come down right to the end like we've seen a lot of these games recently between St. John's Tipton and Osborne. Dalton Schmidt was actually out for a little bit in a quarantine. He's just come back to practice. They've got the size advantage if Dalton's ready to go, but obviously it's been a lot of time since the Southern Cloud game in the first semester, and this is the first game for St. John's Tipton for all these guys, no matter what, whether they've been in practice this past week or not. So that's one matchup that I'm going to really look at is Dalton Schmidt against Osborne on the inside, because they just don't have the size that they've had in the past, and they really, really rely on, you know, the three-pointer, the shooting, the guards. Their post is a freshman that's really raw right now in Green and Doak Guttery. And so he's going to have his hands full tonight. And so will Reagan Bales, who's been there for a while now and trying to get acclimated as well. So close game again here. You know, St. John's Tipton probably has just a small experience edge from that standpoint, but should be another good one tonight.
Yeah, this is where we're hoping we get these games in, yeah. And now we start to get some of these matchups of teams from the area playing against one another, and maybe we can get into some kind of groove. I mean, that's what we're kind of looking for. That's one thing I've heard from coaches, you know, left and right, and then following on social media, really since the start of season, but especially the last couple of weeks, is can we get into a groove after the holiday break? After we only had, you know, the moratorium, we're 2 weeks, and then we had four practices. Can we get in a regular Friday, Tuesday, Friday schedule, or even, you know, maybe play three games in a week and make up some stuff? And, you know, for Republic County boys, that ain't going to happen, yeah. As we just talked about earlier. And you feel for them because they've had to deal with quarantines a few times now, and some schools have. And mm-hmm. then there's others that have been able to get a lot of games in, and it's just a one to the another, and maybe you get lucky and you catch a break and you avoid a team that, you know, ended up having an issue, and then you don't get, you know, thrown into a quarantine as well. So, you know, St. John's Tipton's had a chance to play quite a few games so far this yeah. year. And Osborne, too, for the most
yeah.
part.
You know? They've made most yeah. of their games.
Now, on the other side for Beloit, which we'll have Beloit tonight, it's boys games only. JV at 4:30, C-team around 5:15, 5:30. Varsity around 6:30 tonight. We'll have those live video stream, ncksports.com, be the Beloit Trojan channel, Ellsworth at Beloit. We have KU basketball tonight on Z96.3 The Lake, so video stream only. I'll have the call on the video stream so you can watch and listen at the same time. And as with every game so far this year, Beloit is the team that is the least experienced, as Ellsworth has an experienced team coming back, according to head coach Ryan Eiler.
It's another senior-heavy group with a lot of experience that they've put a lot of weight on this season, and you know, we're seeing that in a lot of the teams that we're playing, that this is the year a lot of those schools have been waiting for. And so for us, we've got to come out on Tuesday and just continue to build it, but build with more consistency. You know, that's the thing. If you're wanting to become a good team, you got to play a consistent four quarters.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, for the Beloit boys, is you see the flashes. You see, I mean, they've got no seniors on the roster. They have, you know, juniors that are talented that, you know, are the ones that kind of, you know, relying on a little bit, especially, you know, two or three of them right now. And then you look at some of the younger players, sophomores and freshmen that, you know, made some nice plays and saw some flashes the other night against Hoisington. And, you know, what I've said is that, and I said on the broadcast last week, is if you can compete at least for a spell and do some good things against, I think, one of the best teams in the state in 3A, why can't you do that against anybody mm-hmm. on your schedule? Now, the consistency part's the hard part. With any young, inexperienced team at any level, whether it be sports or even a job, for crying out loud, in regular life, you're not going to have that consistency until you learn and get comfortable and feel yeah. comfortable. And you're seeing some of these freshmen that for Beloit and sophomores too that are becoming a little bit more comfortable each and every game. You know, Ellsworth is a 4-0 team. They're undefeated. But it's a team that Beloit can compete with, and it's a team that honestly I think they can be right there with them at the end of the game and have a chance to win. If they play like they did against Riley County, they can definitely mm-hmm. win this game. They can definitely win this game. If they play like they did against Southeast start the year, then yeah, they're not gonna probably win. If they play like they did against Hoisington the other night, they'll have a shot because, you know, they were up at the end of the first quarter against Hoisington, and they did some good things against Hoisington. The biggest problems for Beloit right now, obviously everybody knows, inexperience, they're young, they're green, but also is their defense needs to get better. And it's not just their first shot defense. They don't rebound the ball that well. So you get a stop, but then you don't get an offense. You don't get a defensive board, and the other mm-hmm. team gets a second, third chance opportunity. That's hurt them, and they knew going in that'd be an issue because their biggest size they have inside is a freshman. I mean, that's the height, the only height they have are freshmen. And then the other problem for Beloit has been transition defense. Like, they have to shoot more threes. They don't really have somebody that's going to break you off the dribble and attack and go all the way to hoop like a, you know, Vinny Pollin could do in some years, you know. They don't have that this year at that level. And so they have to rely more on a mid-range shot or maybe get some steals and layups, which they haven't forced a lot of turnover so far this year, although they played really good competition. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to hit some threes. And when they shoot threes, and they do shoot quite a few of them, But when you can't get to the bucket and you don't have really a post presence to score inside, you know, other than a couple of freshmen who are learning and they can make some of these moves, but they're just not there yet. They will eventually get there. Then you turn into more of a perimeter-oriented team. And so then you shoot what? More jumpers, more threes. What happens when you miss threes? Long rebounds. And that's one thing that's killed this Beloit boys basketball team in the last few games, and it happened even against Riley County, really every game this year, is that at the end of the day, I look at the stats and I go, oh, well, the Beloit boys didn't have as many turnovers as I thought. But it feels like a turnover when they shoot a three and the long rebound, and next thing you know, it's a three-on-two because Beloit can't get back. Or the other team is just cherry picking because they know you're gonna shoot threes, yeah. And so they send somebody. Next thing you know, you're defending two versus three, or you know, you have a 2-on-1 for the opponent on against you, a 2-on-1, a 3-on-2, a 3-on-1, and you get what? High percentage buckets. You miss it. You got the numbers. You get the offensive rebound and stick back. And so those are the two things that really stand out to me for Beloit, is that one, they're gonna have to hit outside shots. Two, when they miss those shots, they got to get back defensively, and then rebounding. And we knew that going into the season, that rebounding was going to be a concern, considering, you know, what they have available to them. So I think Beloit is getting better. It's going to be, you know, sometimes it's going to feel like baby steps. Sometimes there are going to be games where you're going to really see a lot of progress and more consistency. And there's going to be some games where you're going to go, what happened? We played so well the last game. What happened? Or we played well that quarter. What happened? Because that's what you see. It's just typical. Beloit's no different than any other young, inexperienced team, whether it's boys or girls. It's the same old story. It's that you need that experience. And you cannot substitute experience. You cannot substitute varsity or even JV action compared to just playing in practice. You can simulate it all you want, but it's not the same thing.
No.
Especially against the teams they're going against. Like, Beloit can't take their starting five and scrimmage against a whole bunch of seniors because they don't have any.
Yeah.
Whereas Hoisington gets better, like Beloit did 2 years ago, when Beloit had 9 starters, basically. Their scrimmages and practices, they got more out of practicing each other than they did playing Russell, I can tell you that,
mm-hmm.
Right? Hoisington probably gets more out of scrimmaging each other than they got maybe the other night playing Beloit, because they have 9 guys, 10 guys.
Yeah.
And so when you have that depth and experience, like Beloit's had the last couple, well, 2 years ago. Last year, they'd really kind of dropped off after the first, you know, 7 guys maybe because of experience. But 2 years ago, I mean, the practices were, like, better than most of the games Beloit played. Well, now you don't have all that experience.
Yeah.
So then you practice, and you're practicing against guys that, you know, juniors, sophomores, freshmen. But you can't – it's like trying to go up against the Alabama offense. Could Ohio State simulate the Alabama offense in practice? No.
No.
You can do all you want. You can sit here and go, we're going to simulate Tyreek Hill. We're going to get ready for the Chiefs. Good luck with that. We're gonna simulate. This guy's going to play the role of Travis Kelce. Good luck with that. This guy's going to play the role of Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, good luck with that, because there's only one of those guys. And it's you're not going to see him in practice. You're going to see him on the field on game day. And it's the same way at any level of sports. You're going to have to see these kids that are seniors, and Ellsworth's got seniors again, and experience, and they are dealing with a quarantine, by the way. Ellsworth's missing a few players, including one starter tonight. It just takes time, and that's really the biggest. There's two words that I keep coming back to when it comes to the Beloit girls and boys basketball teams. There's two words that I keep coming back to. Patience. Compete. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I could have saved yourselves a lot of time, folks. I should have. Patience. Compete. If these kids compete, they will get better. Don't hang their heads. Don't quit, which they won't. They keep fighting through adversity. They will get better. They will take their lumps, and in a couple of years, they will reap the benefits of that, I believe. But you have to.
Yeah.
But the only way that works is if you compete. That's one, right? Compete. But then everybody has to have patience. And if people don't, if the coaches don't have patience, if the players don't have patience, then you've got a problem. And even your support staffs, your parents, and your alums and your community. If they don't have patience, that can make it worse, too, because then, you know, the kids hear things from the community. Trust me, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always easy to jump on a winner, and it's very easy to jump off a team that's losing. It's the easiest thing that you can do in society, I think. You jump off of somebody that, you know, it's very easy to jump off the ship very quickly, and it's
yes.
easy to jump on when it's convenient. And I think that's no different even at the high school level. So patience, compete. Those are the two words I would use for not just Beloit, but anybody out there that has young players. And maybe it's just one player on your – maybe you have a really good team, but your point guard's young. That still applies.
Yes.
Patience, compete. If you can do those two things, it will pay dividends. And we've seen it. We've talked about it many times how it paid dividends for St. John's Tipton with that freshman class that got beat to a pulp in football that one year. It paid off. They stuck with it. They didn't quit. You know, fought through it. There were games they shouldn't even been playing varsity. They should have been playing JV. Shouldn't even been playing varsity. And they got their heads beat in. And then, next thing you know, they won a state championship basketball and make it to the semis in football.
One win away from the state championship.
A lot of success.
Yeah,
that paid dividends.
Oh, for sure.
No doubt.
That's life, right?
It is.
And
same thing with
the
job.
You
start
right?
lower on the totem pole in a job. You work your way up, usually.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. And you have to... You have to compete, I guess, in a lot of things in just life, right? You have to stay there. You have to stay in the right mindset, the right frame of mind, and not get too far down.
Right.
And, you know, some people do. There's no question about that. But it is. It's just what it is. And no matter what, if you're inexperienced, you got to put the work in. You got to compete, and you got to just stay at it. And eventually it'll pay off for you.
Yeah, I totally.
For most people.
Yeah, I think it's true. I truly do believe that. All right, so that's high school basketball tonight. Once again, it's Osborne hosting St. John's Tipton girls and boys basketball tonight. Boys only with JV at 4:30, and then C-team at around 5:30, varsity around 6:30. All those games at the high school gym at Beloit Ellsworth at Beloit. Live video stream at nckssports.com, available at Trojan Channel. All right, we turn our attention to football here for a moment. A former K-State football star is going to be a Hall of Famer in the College Football Hall of Fame, and rightfully so. He was one of the most electrifying all-purpose running backs that we've seen in college football. In the early 2000s, Darren Sproles has been selected to the National Football Foundation's College Football Hall of Fame induction class of 2021. He's the sixth K-State player or coach to be selected. Third in the last 10 years, he joins Gary Spaney, Mark Cimino, Smith Center's own, who we've had on our show before, as well as coaches Lynn Pappy Waldorf, Charles Bachman, and, of course, Bill Snyder. So congratulations to Darren Sproles. I'm still wondering when Michael Bishop will be in, because he should be.
Yeah. And, yeah, I don't know all the particulars on that, but
I would hope he would be at some point. I mean, I know he wasn't K-State 4 years, but, man, that guy was one of the best players I've seen. I don't know.
All these polls that you see there, it's like, who's the best player to never win the Heisman comes up the other day, and there was, like, there's, like, five people on there, and one of them wasn't even close to Michael Bishop, right? And
right.
Michael Bishop actually replied to it. He's like, how did you come up with these names on Twitter? He's
Michael,
like,
Bishop's forgotten.
Yeah.
So is Michael Beasley, by the way.
Yeah. And that's the rigors of playing in Manhattan, Kansas.
I was going to say, if those guys played at Duke, you wouldn't have that problem, would you? Or Kansas, for that matter, as well. Congratulations to Darren Sproles. That's awesome.
Yes.
The men's basketball game between Kansas State and Iowa State for Wednesday, tomorrow night, has been postponed. In accordance with the Big 12 Conference's game interruption guidelines, postponement is in response to K-State being unable to meet the required COVID-19 thresholds on Monday, as established by the conference. K-State will work with the Big 12 and Iowa State to reschedule the game. There has been no determination on any future K-State games at this time. They barely had enough to play on Saturday against Oklahoma State. This is no surprise. So K-State will not play Iowa State coming up tomorrow. And K-State women's game for this Sunday against Oklahoma State, that has been postponed as well, as K-State women's still on a pause in what they're doing. So basically, K-State's been wiped out due to COVID-19 for basketball for the next few days at least.
Yeah.
And guess what? Nebraska men's basketball team has paused full team activities due to positive COVID-19 results among its Tier 1 personnel. Tier 1 personnel includes student athletes, coaches, and any staff member whose job requires close regular contact. Due to the pause, the Huskers' home game against Illinois, scheduled for tomorrow night, has been postponed, and those institutions will work together to try to reschedule, and there has been no determination right now, and the same thing about K-State men's basketball as well as Nebraska basketball. There's been no determination been made on how the pause or may impact scheduled games beyond January 13th. K-State men technically aren't on a pause. They're just not playing the game on Wednesday as of now, based on the reports. Nebraska's in a pause. K-State women are in a pause. But the point being that the common denominator here is we don't know going forward what's going to happen with the games after the game that's going to be postponed next on the schedule.
Yeah.
Number six.
I think all the women's basketball teams in Division I in Kansas are on pause right now.
I'm going to say, I think KU women still are.
Yeah, because Wichita State, I just saw the other day, I'm pretty sure was added to that.
So. And then you sit here and you have to ask yourself, again, I'm just throwing it out there, why are the women's programs having more problems in the state than the men?
Yeah.
I can't explain that.
Yeah, no.
I don't know. I'm not saying there's conspiracy theories. I just don't know. I don't know.
For sure, yeah.
I mean, we've seen, you know, big time Gonzaga, Villanova, Baylor, three of the top four teams in the country have had all kinds of issues. Tennessee had earlier in the year, they're a top 10 team. So we've seen lots of college basketball teams have issues with pauses and COVID-19. Mm-hmm. And then we've seen a lot with women teams lately. Baylor, of course, another one. We've seen a lot of, you know, the Baylor-West Virginia men's game tomorrow night. Was that tonight or tomorrow night they were going to play?
That was supposed to be tonight.
That was postponed due to COVID because of a problem, not with Baylor, which Baylor's had lots of problems with COVID and football and women's basketball and men's basketball, but it was because of West Virginia having a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is what it is, and we're just going to have to deal with it. So KU supposedly is going to head to Stillwater. KU's been really unaffected so far and based on their schedule for the most part. They definitely haven't been affected in regard to Big 12 schedule, although Oklahoma's short a couple guys, okay? KU's going to head to Stillwater. Cowboys are 8-3, 2-3 in the Big 12. 6:30 pregame tonight on Z96.3 at Lake and tip-off scheduled at 7 o'clock. KU 10-2, 4-1 in the Big 12. And KU's had some problems at Stillwater in the past. Bill Self certainly aware of that.
It's been hard for us. You know, maybe some of it's my fault early on, especially maybe putting too much pressure on the guys that I really wanted to win there. I don't know. But I think that they get pretty amped up to play against us. And, you know, they've had really good players and they've had some good teams. And so we know going down there today, we're going to be playing against a team that's, you know, if you look at their three losses, I mean, two of them on the last possession, the other one in overtime. I mean, if I'm not mistaken. So they could very easily be 10-1 or 11-0, and they have, you know, arguably, you know, the best prospect in the country. So they've got a nice team. Mike's done a great job, and he's well liked by everybody down there, and they play hard for him.
Of course, Bill Self's alma mater, Oklahoma State. He's very in tune with what's happening down there, and I think he will win tonight. I know it's a place that's been a problem for them, but the last few years hasn't been as bad as people you know, make it out to be. You know, when KU loses one game on the road, it seems like KU fans immediately go, "We always lose there. That's always a tough one. How can you always lose there? You always win the Big 12. We always lose at West Virginia. That's not actually true. We always struggle in Ames. That's not true. They blew them out last year. We always struggle at Stillwater. No, last year I believe you rolled them, if I remember right, or 2 years ago. Anyway, they've had success there. It's just that people remember that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, we had trouble at OU. Yeah, you lost once in the last, what, 8 years there? I don't know. I'm just pulling out of my memory bank, and they might have lost more than once there. But anyway, you know, I'll say it again until I'm blue in the face. If David McCormick plays like he has been playing, KU's going to be fine. And if he plays well tonight, I think they'll win. I do. If he is not a factor at all, gets in foul trouble, and then you're going to have KU relying on perimeter jumpers more likely, which they can make. If they don't, they're vulnerable. Just put it on rewind, play it back. It's going to be the same thing I'm going to say every game almost. TCU is at Oklahoma tonight as well at 6:30. Doug Peterson is out as the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Boy, that honeymoon was short. 3 years after leading the franchise to their first Super Bowl title, the Eagles had a meeting with Peterson yesterday in Florida, and they said sayonara. He 4-11-1 record this year. Of course, the controversy pulling Jalen Hurts in a game that meant nothing to the Eagles, which they should applaud Doug Peterson for doing that because they moved from 9th to 6th in the draft order.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an awkward and weird situation. It did, you know, obviously look bad. I can't deny that. They met. The owner and the CEO, Jeffrey Lurie, said, "We're disappointed the way the season went. We had an opportunity to sit down with Coach Peterson, and we decided after talking that we're going to go our separate ways." So in essence, we don't see eye to eye, clearly. So there's a 7th vacancy. Mike Kafka, currently on Andy Reid's staff, quarterbacks coach at the Chiefs, is one that's rumored to maybe get an interview. Of course, Eric Bieniemy pops up all the time. Isn't it interesting? The Eagles got so tired of Andy Reid after all his success that eventually they ran him out of town. Then he goes to Kansas City. All he does is win division titles and gets first-round buys and now winning Super Bowls, or Super Bowl, hopefully Super Bowls. And they keep going back to the Reid tree. Like, they went to Doug Peterson. That worked out somehow.
Yeah.
Because I didn't think Doug Peterson was going to be a great head coach, and they won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles as their quarterback against the Patriots, which was awesome. That was fun. Philly special. And then they're talking, reports are they're going to talk to maybe Bieniemy, but maybe more so the Mike Kafka. It's like, so you got tired of Andy Reid, but yet you want a Reid protege. Like, if I'm the Eagles, it worked out with Doug Peterson winning a Super Bowl, but it was a short marriage. I would think they'd go somewhere outside the Reid tree.
Why would you go back to Andy Reid after you've gotten rid of Peterson?
Right.
So that was my first thought, because people are like, They might go with Kafka, who's also from the Andy Reid coaching tree. And I'm like, okay, first of all, you got rid of Andy Reid. And yes, I get it. Yeah. It was
stale.
He'd
been there 14 years.
It's been a long time, and he never got anywhere you wanted to
go. And
everybody 100% understands why that happened. You know, Philly's not an easy place to get along.
It's probably a good parting of the ways.
Finishing. Mm-hmm. And so then, obviously, the Chip Kelly thing did not work.
No.
And so, yeah, you go to Peterson, and I feel like, you know, it might have been a little early to pull that trigger right now. But, you know, it was trending downward without a question. So they make the decision that let's move on. So let's move on. Let's move on from Andy Reid and try it again on a different way, I feel like. But I don't know. Maybe Eagles fans and personnel and everybody's happy with that and just wanted fresh blood again.
You know, we were talking about this with Gus Malzahn of Auburn, a winning record, 6-4. He got fired. And then Tom Herman, he's 7-3. Once they knew they could get Sarkisian, they fired Tom Herman. And for outsiders looking in, just like you just made a comment, and I agree with you, by the way, as to this is how we would possibly see it, is, man, that doesn't make a lot of sense. You got a coach that's winning. You know, he wins games. He's won. Tom Herman won all his bowl games. It's not like they're that far away. They lost in quadruple overtime to Oklahoma. You know, and we had Brian Smoller on the show, I think it was last week. We were talking about how basic coaches should get a pass because of COVID-19. Now, NFL is a multi-billion dollar mm-hmm. system, and nobody's going to
their
get
whole
a pass.
Season was played.
Like, right, and their whole season was played, and they all had the same deal they had to deal with. So I get the NFL a little bit. But you know, like Brian said, you know, from the outside looking in, we can say Tom Herman, Gus Malzahn, or we can say this or that. But he said, in some of these cases, there was already extenuating circumstances to where there is already a rocky relationship mm-hmm. that you can infer. And clearly with Doug Peterson, his relationship with with the owner and the CEO and GM had deteriorated during the season to where mm-hmm. it got to the point where he did what he did, I think, to send a message at the end of the season. I think Doug Peterson wanted out. I think that was a good way for him to get out. And I think Doug Peterson's going to get certainly many more opportunities. In fact, there's talks he might maybe go to the Jets. I mean, Doug Peterson's going to have a job somewhere. I mean, it's amazing how you win a Super Bowl and 3 years later you're a buffoon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that. Like, I always said this. Like, Bill Snyder, when he won the Big 12 title in 2003 and they manhandled Oklahoma, Bill Snyder was a genius. A few years later, the game had passed him by and Bill Snyder was an idiot and old man. I mean, that was the narrative. And I said on this show, and when I was in Seneca at the time, I said, this is simple. Bill Snyder wasn't the genius everybody thought he was by blowing out Oklahoma in 2003, and he's not the moron 2 years later, and the game has not passed him by like people said. It's very simple. It's somewhere in between. You know, Bill Snyder's a great coach. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a great coach. He is a great coach. You're going to have a year where things don't go as well. And, you know, obviously the 2.0 Bill Snyder, that was out of touch and so forth and so on. I get that. But I'm talking still 1.0. And then you look at Doug Peterson. Has Doug Peterson gotten dumber since he won a Super Bowl? Do we think he's a dumber, worse coach? Because coaches, I don't think, get worse. I think they're either bad to start with or they get better. I don't really think coaches get worse. Does that make sense? Do you know of any coach that's gotten worse? Like, maybe their record's gotten worse, but that doesn't mean they're a worse coach. You get my point? I guess you can get worse if you get a big head, and maybe that's what happened to Doug Peterson. He got a big head. He won a Super Bowl in year two with the Eagles, and now he knows everything, and so forth and so on, and he rubbed people the wrong way, and the players didn't like him, and obviously the players weren't happy with his decision in that final game of the season to bench Jalen Hurts against the Washington football team. But what my point is, I think there was extenuating circumstances here. Like you said, I thought he would get more time. I'm surprised they did it that soon. To me, I'm not surprised, maybe as much as you.
Well, based on what happened with the season, I understand.
Right. Yeah. And there was extenuating circumstances. I mean, you got your, you know, number two overall pick. You benched him, Carson Wentz. You're supposed to be a quarterback, offensive mind, a quarterback's coach in essence. And Doug Peterson at one point was, obviously, quarterback's coach of the Chiefs, and then he was offensive coordinator before he went to the Eagles. He's supposed to get the best out of his quarterback. And maybe Doug Peterson says, you know, you didn't get me the best weapons for my quarterback. You didn't get the best offensive line to protect my quarterback. And maybe that's why they didn't see eye to eye. Like, dude, the organization may say, we invested too much in Carson Wentz. He's got to be our guy next year. And Doug Peterson's like, dude, he ain't the guy. I'm convinced he's not the guy. Mm-hmm. That's why we benched him. Or maybe Doug Peterson said Carson Wentz is the guy, and the organization wants to walk away from Carson Wentz. I would imagine that's probably one of the biggest sticking points they had in those conversations.
Yeah.
And if you can't agree on the quarterback and you can't agree on the way you're going to move forward offensively, especially when you're offensive-minded coach, then, yeah, you walk away from each other. And Doug Peterson will get a job somewhere else, and he'll be a head coach somewhere else. You know why? Because he has this big, fat Super Bowl ring on his resume, which is pretty impressive. And he's still not that old of a coach. And and the organization will be just fine as long as they find a good coach to replace him.
Yeah, and that's that whole quarterback thing with Carson Wentz. Like, you know, the owner Lurie says that it wasn't because he benched Wentz, but then you're reading some of the comments that he has after he says that.
It's inferred,
and it sounds like he really wants Carson Wentz to be the Eagles' quarterback.
Right. Which I think you really would want to, too, when you invested that much money in the guy. Because you ain't going to get a lot for him if you trade him. It'll be a huge cap hit. I mean, and I don't think Jalen Hurts is a long-term answer.
No, and I don't either. Mm-hmm. And so, but why did you spend that pick on Jalen Hurts, right?
Well, I think it was kind of like, you know, why would you grab a Taysom Hill? Why have some teams gotten guys that are quarterbacks? They think they can make them another kind of weapon.
Yeah.
And you've seen that in NFL with a few teams.
Yeah.
So I get that.
But, I mean, in my mind, I mean, this is Jeffrey Lurie's mind is what I was saying that for.
Right.
It's like he's probably like, well, why do we – like Wentz is our guy. Why are we spending this pick? Why do we – you know, we spend a lot of money on Carson Wentz. Let's get him there.
Right.
And
and he's still young.
And, you know, he says a lot about that had nothing to do with it. And I'm like, I don't buy
that.
I think
it had a lot to do with it.
I think Carson Wentz had a lot to do with this.
I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you. You know, owners always tell you the truth. Oh, we really like this coach. He's going to be here for a while. 2 weeks later, they fire him. So, you know, it's that dreaded vote of confidence. Kind of like Tom Herman got in Texas.
Yeah, exactly.
How'd that work out? Finally, we end with this. The Chicago White Sox has signed free agent relief pitcher Liam Hendricks to a 3-year, $54 million deal. Now, why would I bring this up today? What's the big deal? Just another athlete getting a big contract, right? Well, here's the interesting thing. It's a guaranteed $54 million contract. At $18 million per year, Liam Hendricks breaks the record for average annual value for a relief pitcher. He surpasses another former Royal, Wade Davis, who got a 3-year, $52 million contract in 2018 with the Rockies. Here's why I bring it up. Do you Royals fans remember he pitched for the Royals? He was a starter.
A lot of them probably don't.
He was like a spot starter. He was with them for a short period of time, traded to the Royals from the Blue Jays. Liam Hendricks, if you're ever one of those people out there and you want to give up, you want to quit on your dreams, or you give up on your ability, Liam Hendricks, who is 32 years of age, was cut and let go by four Major League Baseball organizations. He's been traded multiple times, and he has been absolutely DFA'd, designated for assignment, four times. But guess what? In June of 2018 was the last time he was cut. I mean, just 2 years ago, nobody wanted him at the time. He decided, you know what? I'm going to quit throwing my sinker. He relied more on a four-seam fastball. He was able to add velocity to his fastball. And over the last 2 years, Liam Hendricks, former Royal, but most Royals fans don't even know that, has struck out 38% of the batters he's faced his last 2 years. That's really remarkable. This is a guy that transformed himself.
Mm-hmm.
And you can usually do it when you're a relief pitcher. That's where you can reincarnate. You're a failed starter. Every bullpen success story is a failed starter. Trust me.
Yes.
You don't start your career as, I'm a stopper.
No.
You're a starter in high school. You're a starter in college. And then you turn into a reliever like Luke Hochaver and other guys, Wade Davis, another one. Liam Hendricks was DFA'd four times. And at the age of 30... reincarnated his career, resurrected his career, and now he's getting a 3-year, $54 million guaranteed contract with the Chicago White Sox to be their closer. And there's a club option for a fourth where he can get even more money after that. And that's an all-time record for a relief pitcher, breaking the record of Wade Davis, another former Royal. That's an amazing success story, and I think it's awesome, and I wanted to share. I remember when he was with the Royals and he pitched and they were like, I remember Ryan Lefebvre talking about how he's got good stuff. He just hasn't harnessed it yet. He hasn't been consistent. His biggest problem is consistency. Well, by golly, he finally found it in the nick of time and now he's cashing in.
Yes.
So go pull 10 Royals fans out there and ask him, hey, you remember, ask him, just throw that name Liam Hendricks out there and say, hey, you remember Liam Hendricks? They won't. 9 out of 10 won't. I'll be stunned if one does.
They probably remember Will Smith better than Liam Hendricks,
right? Right.
Because everybody's like,
not
every
the
time
actor.
He went out there, he's, you know, everybody made the joke about the actor.
So, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. He wasn't there. There was a cup of coffee with the Royals, but he went right back to Toronto the next year. So, but I remember the name, obviously, because we report on those trades when they happen.
And he's from Australia.
Sportscast, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, he's got an accent. People say he's a good dude, funny guy and everything. I love hearing stories about that.
Oh, yeah. for sure.
Once again, why is baseball so great? If you can make it in baseball and you're good enough, you can get the guaranteed contract and you can blow your arm out tomorrow. Liam mm-hmm. Hendricks can blow his arm out tomorrow as long as he signed the contract. That's $54 million of guaranteed money, baby. Only in America. Have a great day. Enjoy the basketball now on the radio, on the video stream.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.
94.1 Radar Weather.